Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Riverfront. This is episode number 502 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast, where we discuss the Cincinnati Reds and occasionally Ron Valone. I'm your host, Nate Dotson. With me this week is someone that longtime listeners, or I should say recent listeners and viewers, have probably never seen before. It's your favorite and mine. It's Chad Dotson. Chad, how are you, brother?
I'm good. I've been having some withdrawals from not being able to join you in recent weeks. Since the big 500th episode. We'll maybe talk about that in a moment. But good to be here. Happy to be talking to these Cincinnati Reds again, despite some disappointing recent results. But I'm still optimistic. Plenty of time left.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. You meet Joe Farsi in person and suddenly you stop coming on the podcast. I don't know what that's about.
I said I'm out.
Before we get into the nitty-gritty, I would like to say, if you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. That's super important to helping this podcast grow. If you want to help us grow, if you don't want to help us grow, then don't do anything. But if you listen to the audio versions, why not give us a little subscribe action? You can hear our voices every week, along with the voices of Joe and Greg and Tim and Ben, and just all kinds of good people. Now, we are all the places where you can find the things, but most importantly, we could not do this without the Patreon family. They are our lifeblood, and we appreciate all y'all so much. If you, too, want to join the family, you can do that over at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy, where for a couple bucks, you can talk about collectibles and comic books with Tim Daniel in your own private Slack channel. Listen, deal of the century.
Unbelievable. Right, unbelievable. Unbelievable value right there.
Incredible. So I guess we do need to talk about this baseball stuff. Right now, as we're recording this, the Reds are at 79-75. That will not change because they are off today. They are, I think, 7 games back in the Central. They were when I wrote this note, and they are currently 1 game out of the final wild card spot. That could change slightly based on the result of a Cubs-Pirates games today that has Reds fans very conflicted nationwide, having to root for either of those teams. But I don't know, just quick vibes check, Chad. How you feel?
You know, it's a weird vibe right now. It's, you know, they lose 2 out of 3. We'll get into it, I guess, to Minnesota. And I don't know. It's like the Reds are in the playoff hunt. They're legitimately in the playoff hunt. So this should be the most nerve-wracking time that we've had in a long time. And it actually is in many respects. But it's a weird feeling for me. It's a mixture of, oh man, they should be better. They should have done more to get this young, fun team to the finish line. It's a mixture of, boy, the pitching and the offense. It's really not great most days lately. But there's also, I heard some people saying that the final game of that Twin series is must win. And it's not, it wasn't, it would have been great. It would have been great to have that one, but it's just a weird time. I don't know how to explain it. Every game, it feels a little like a playoff race, as I recall it, but I'm struggling to come up with the words for how I'm experiencing this. I'm not sure, but good vibes only, I guess, is what I'm gonna lean into, because it's they're a game out of the playoff race now. There's 2 teams ahead of them. It's not gonna be easy, but it wasn't must win. They still have time. There's still 8 games to go, but man, we're running out of time to grab this thing. But that means the last 8 games are gonna be fun, I hope.
Yeah, I think it's really fair to say and important to point out, because this is something that I've been noticing all across Reds fandom, is that the feelings about this team from, let's just call it pre-trade deadline, when they were in first place. No commentary on what happened at the deadline. I'll get into that later. Compared to now, are so different. Some of that, like that exuberance, that positivity that was ever present, isn't there anymore. And I'm not entirely sure why. I do want to try to unpack that here in a little bit. But I'm trying to temper my, juggle these emotions, because I am so pumped to be in a playoff race. But I'm so annoyed with the roster, the lineups that keep getting run out every day. And I'm excited about the chance to play the Braves or Brewers, but also terrified of what might happen against a really good major league club in the playoffs. So definitely going to lean hard on the good vibes only train. We are keeping the positivity. They have some work to do. They no longer control their own destiny, but it's a weird time in Reds land.
I think that you did a better job there. I was kind of bouncing around trying to explain this. And I think that's a pretty good description. It should be like this most exciting time we've had in a long time. They're literally one game out of a playoff spot right now. But there's this thing where it's just they kind of squandered this opportunity. They were in first. You talk about being 7-8 games out right now of first place. They were in first place at the trade deadline. They were literally in first place. And so I'm trying to kind of forget that. I'm trying to or not focus on that because there's still a chance for the playoffs. A real chance, not like a pipe dream chance.
Well, and the fact remains that all they have to do is make it. Anything can happen once they make it.
Yeah, exactly.
But they are limping to the finish line.
They are struggling to get across this finish line. It has been an ugly month in a lot of ways. And the fact that they're still in it is a mixture of, well, MLB has expanded the playoffs and the league is outside of Atlanta really is sort of mediocre in some ways. But also it's just, you know, they're good, but they're not great. And so to those that say, well, next year's supposed to be our year. Okay, I guess.
I hope.
But I hope. We have a question coming up about that. Then I have some pointed thoughts about that. So I don't know how to explain it. I thought if you'd have told me before the season that the Reds are one game out of a wild card spot with 8 games to go, sign me up. And if you tell me today that's the case, still sign me up. I'm happy about it. And I'm excited for this last 8 games. It's going to be fun to watch these. And because I love that drama and that passion of every pitch is important. Even if it's Derek Law throwing the pitch, or Ian Jabeau. I love that. I'm excited for these last 8 games. I'm as excited for these last 8 games as I've been for a Reds games in a long time. But there's this weird kind of malaise over, man, they could have been so much more. They were in first place. And so I'm trying to ignore that part of it. I'm just trying to ignore it. It's difficult, but I'm trying.
Well, ignore it for a little bit longer because I want to come back to that. I had a thought that we hadn't really discussed on this podcast that I want to throw your way here in a little bit. But before we get there, it just occurred to me, as you said, you haven't been on here since the live show. What were your thoughts on that? I sure had a good time. I had too many good times in the form of a 16-ounce cup.
I do want to talk about that, and I feel bad that I've not been on here since then because that was as much fun as I've had in a long time on the podcast or Reds related. I made my triumphant return 2 games at the Great American Ballpark. My whole goal was to see Joey and Ellie on the field at the same time. Did not happen. He played the day after our live show. But that was a good time. That was, for those of you that were there, thank you so much for coming. I mean, we had people that came from a long way away, and I don't know why you would do that, but I can't tell you how much that means to me to be able to meet some of these people that whose names we've seen, whose names sometimes we say on our viewer mail, and to get to talk to you in real life. And then besides those of you that came, and that place was kind of rocking a little bit. It was a good crowd. I was concerned. This is me. This is the way I think of things. Oh no, we're gonna throw a party and nobody's gonna come. But people came, and it really it brought a tear to my in some ways. But besides just the people that came, getting to hang out with our Riverfront crew, because we've never all been in the same room together until then. As a matter of fact, you may be surprised to learn this. I've not been in the same room with Nate since Nate was 7 years old. We've literally never been in the same room together.
But that's by choice.
That is by choice. We don't like each other off camera.
The oldest brother, little brother dynamic. He's like, I'm not the favorite anymore.
Exactly. But no, getting to see, we joked about Joe Farsing earlier. We're getting to see Joe. Getting to see Tim. Tim is just, Tim's pure. Tim is such a good guy. Good. The fact that Carlos showed up even after I, you know, kind of dissed him in Texas a few months back. You know, Chris Garber didn't make it onto the show. He got there a little late, but hanging out with Chris, it's always fun to hang out with Chris. He's one of my best friends, one of my favorite people. I don't know. It makes me want to do 550 and 600 and 650 and 700. It makes me want to do that again just because it was such a, it was just a fun time. Yes. Yeah, so, okay. We had some audio issues. We got some things to work out before the next one. Whatever.
The Reds lost both games. Absolute
blast. The Reds lost both games. So maybe we shouldn't do this again. But I don't know. I wanted to take a moment to thank people for showing up, to thank the Riverfront crew for making it such a fun time. And I don't know. It was a blast. So I don't know if there's any other thoughts other than what you've already said about it, but I don't know. It was a good time, and it was good to finally see you again in real life.
Now we've gone on at length, and I'm really, really looking forward to doing that again. Let's quickly go through the results since we last recorded. Things started off pretty well in the Big Apple. Reds won 2 out of 3 against the Metropolitans. Game one featured home runs from Jonathan India and Spencer Steer. Noelvi Marte had a 3-hit day. Maybe a little more on him later. We call that a teaser in the business. And Hunter had a decent, not great start, but perfectly fine. Game two was another win. CES and TJ Friedl both had 2 hits. One of CES's was a bomb. Andrew Abbott only went 3.2 innings that game. Only had like 76 pitches or something. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. But I will say real quick before you get into that, if you do have any, is that Willie Castro can go suck an egg. I don't even know who this guy was. He just shows up and absolutely dominates defensively. Wins a series almost on his own defensively. Tyler Stevenson should have had 2 hits and 4 RBIs in game 3. Didn't, because Willie's stinking Castro. Anyway, Andrew Abbott.
Yeah, you know, Abbott, I'm an Abbott fan. Talked to a guy just the other day. He walks up to me and out of nowhere says, hey, I'm from Halifax, Virginia. I watched Andrew Abbott in high school. You love that guy, right? I was like, Yeah. I unironically love Andrew Abbott. And I think what we're seeing is Andrew Abbott is, he's tired. He's thrown a lot of innings. And I'm worried about when the Reds make the playoffs. I'm a little, not worried, but I'm a little concerned. The pitching is, the Reds have one starter at this point, frankly. So I don't know. You know, I think Abbott's getting a little tired. I think he's, I don't know that there's any more analysis to be done. He's pitched more innings than he has before. He's good. I don't know. I don't know what to say, Nate. I don't know what you're wanting from me. We have drenched every bit of value out of Abbott that we can get this year. And I hope we get more, but he's struggling right now a little bit. And I think that's, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, that's it. Completely expected. This is what's going to happen when you pitch 30, 40, 50 more innings than you ever have in your entire life, not to mention the intensity, the leverage. You're in a playoff chase. You're in the major leagues for the first time. Like, these innings are not equal to the same ones he was throwing in AAA. So I'm not worried about Andrew Abbott. Hope he can, win the Reds make the playoffs. Hope he gets back on track and he's lights out for a start or two. Not expecting it, but worth keeping an eye on.
Look, it could happen. He's good. It could happen.
Let's playoff adrenaline goes pumping through those veins. Who knows?
Well, if you go back, those of you that didn't watch it like I did in real time, go watch him in the College World Series. Adrenaline is a thing, and he showed up in the College World Series, so he's going to show up now in the MLB World Series a couple years later.
Boom. Your mouth to God's ear. Reds did lose that game 3 of that series. Had 2 hit days from Senzel, CES, and Joseph Daniel Votto. Brandon Williams got knocked around again. He's probably getting a little bit tired too. Starting to see
absolutely
signs of slippage from him, but everything we just said about Andrew Abbott also goes for him.
Can I just say quickly?
Yeah.
Both those guys, I am thrilled with what we got out of both those guys this season. If they don't, improve recently, it's just such a great season for both those. Abbott, complete surprise. You never expect them to make it this far this year. You might have thought he'd be a late season call up and do this well. Williamson, the way he started out, the fact that he's actually been all season long, he's been better and better and better. I just want to say both those guys, I'm really optimistic about their futures in Cincinnati.
Oh, man. For me, Brandon Williamson is by far the surprise of the season. Like everybody else at least came with some sort of expectation. Like eventually we're like, yeah, they're going to be good. They're going to be good. Brandon Williamson was a top 100 prospect 2 years ago. Since he got traded to the Reds, he has been hot, steaming garbage. He was awful. He had an ERA over 7 in AAA when he made his major league debut. And sure, that day, he pitched like 5 innings and 2 earned runs or something like that. And he's just been this steadying everything you want out of a number 5 starter since he got called up to the big leagues. And now suddenly, I start thinking his ceiling could be a little bit higher. He could be a 4 or 3 guy. But if he is just sticks around that 5, you know what you need? Solid number 5 starters.
I'll take it. Yeah.
I've loved what I've seen out of Brandon Williamson. Unfortunately, after he got knocked around, Carson Spears came in and pitched multiple innings. And I think, exactly. This is the heart of what I want to get to a little bit later. Like, there's a lot of people that are making pitching meaningful innings and meaningful points of the season that have no business being on a major league roster, at least not yet. So we'll get to that later. Then Minnesota comes to town for the final homestand of the year. Some say it's the final homestand of Bob Castellini's ownership.
Oh, God. There's from your mouth to God's ear.
I wasn't even going to put it out there. I do want to just touch on a couple things. One, Connor Phillips came out in game one of that series and twirled a gem. You said we only have one starter right now, buddy.
Okay.
I love everything about Connor Phillips. I'm not willing to put him up there as a ready to go playoff starter yet. I'm not going to throw out hype. I am prone to hyperbole, but I'll dial back a bit. But he was incredible. His stuff was working. He has the bulldog mentality on the mound that I love so much, that Graham Ashcraft sort of thing. I think that he has some chance to have some real staying power in this league.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. He's a guy that really on most teams, he wouldn't even be in the major leagues right now, frankly. He'd be a guy that was in the mix for next year. And you've seen that before his most recent start. You've seen that. He's been uneven. It's been not what you would certainly hope for in a pennant race, but my goodness, bulldog is the word I would use. That start against Minnesota. The truth is, one of the best starts I've seen from any Red starter all year. Yep. I mean, he was in control, and it's kind of one of these, it's a glimpse. And we've seen it from Hunter Green. We've seen it from Nick Lodolo. We've seen it from Graham Ashcraft. It's Andrew Abbott. You've seen a glimpse of, at their best, what they could be. And he's not at his best yet. He's a kid still. But that's one where I had a pretty high opinion of him. And then I watched that start, and I was like, oh, maybe this guy could be even a little better than I expected. So I'm with you. It was that was as fun. That game in the past week, that was by far the most fun I had just because of Phillips.
Yeah.
Pretty can I ask you a question? Is he the best player named Phillips in the history of the Cincinnati Reds?
I wish there was an alarm to set the trolls loose.
I'm trolling a little bit there on that one.
No exaggeration, though. He could end up being.
Well, now that's it. If he ends up being the best Phillips in Reds history, oh my. That's a big deal. Because there's another guy named Phillips who was okay. Kenny Phillips from the 1940s. Go look him up. Kenny Phillips.
Legend. Game two of that stupid Minnesota series was a bullpen day.
Let's do
it. Why are we having bullpen days? Why are we having bullpen days in the last 2 weeks of a season when your Reds, they're not my Reds, they're yours, are in a playoff hunt? We are trotting out Fernando Cruz as a starter, followed by people like Derek Law. Then Ben Lively comes in and does what Ben Lively does, which is give up some runs. No shade against Ben Lively. He did an admirable job with what was asked of him this season.
No doubt.
It blows my mind that this team is – they had 2 bullpen days in like 4 or 5 days. How do you consider yourself a serious franchise when you don't have enough starters to compete for a season.
Yeah.
In the playoff race. It is so frustrating watching this race, the excitement of this. And this is why I was kind of what I was getting to earlier. Why the enthusiasm seems to be down. Why there were only 15,000 people at Great American Ballpark on a Friday night. Because we're starting Fernando Cruz. And I think Fernando Cruz is awesome. I love Fernando Cruz. He's a heck of a reliever. He should be relieving the starter.
Yeah. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier. This is the reason why, I don't know if conflicted is the right term, but it's why this feels different than a real playoff contender. And first of all, it's embarrassing. It should be embarrassing for everyone that they're having bullpen days in the middle of a pennant race. Because you have a bunch of guys, even these bullpen guys, but they're all busting their rear ends. They want to get the playoffs. They're playing hard. They're trying the best they can. And some of these guys have been betrayed by ownership and management. And I know I'm a broken record on this, but I don't know how you can look at it any other way. For all the praise that Nick Kroll deserves for the moves he's made to get the Reds where they are, how do you not see it as an abject failure that in a pennant race? Now, again, we're not going to talk much about the trade deadline, but he failed at the trade deadline to improve this team, to give them a chance to be there. Now we're still kind of hanging around there. How do you not see it?
I like to pepper in and remind everybody that he also, it's not a trade deadline or bust thing. He could have done this in the offseason. Yes.
Exactly. That's where I was going. How do you not see it as a complete management failure that we are in the final week and a half of the season and they're having quote unquote bullpen days? It is.
With a bullpen that is already completely overworked and obviously gassed.
It has been good.
They've been so far better, so much better than they ever should have been. They have any business being.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I'm a little hesitant here because it's an embarrassment. This is a professional sports franchise whose goal should be winning championships. Their goal is making money, this ownership group. But if you win championships, you make money. And I don't know. I don't want to smack them around too much, but gosh, what could have been is the thing with this team.
Yeah.
You just get some reasonable starters in there, and then you got Fernando Cruz coming into the seventh inning. All right, sign me up. But it's frustrating. It's very frustrating that this is where we are.
Yeah, I want to go one step further, and it's what does this signal to the team? We always talk about how we would love to follow that Braves model. Lock up your young talent long term. You know what makes those guys want to stay in Atlanta? Ownership in the front office has every step of the way signaled to them, sign here, even if it's for slightly less than you could get on the open market, because here we are going to do everything we can to give you the best opportunity to win a World Series every single year. Is it always going to work out? Of course not. But they're always going to be in the hunt, at least for a while. That's why you get Matt Olson coming over and signing his long extensions. That's why Ozzie Albee signs his, Ronald signs his. These guys want to stick around because they're like, hey, I love what they're building here. What does it signal to Matt McClain, to Ellie De La Cruz, to Noelvi Marte and CES? What does it tell these guys when they are in first place at the trade deadline, the team does nothing, and this completely, completely serious franchise is running out bullpen days 2 out of 5 days down the stretch in the last 2.5 weeks of a major league season? Does it make them want to stick around forever? And of course, it's baseball, it's business, it's money. You put the offer in front of them, there's a good chance they sign it. But you compare that to what's happening over in Atlanta. And I don't see how you can say anything other than they had a chance to show this core that if they stick around, they're going to be in it for the long haul, that they will be rewarded. And instead, they did nothing. And it kind of stinks.
Yeah, I think the way I would frame this, first of all, is that they can demonstrate to the young core exactly that this offseason. They still can do that, and we aren't at the point where they can't make that case because they didn't do it this year. Now, do I expect them to do that this offseason? We're not going to talk about that until the offseason. I'm going to preview a I'm going to go ahead and read a viewer mail question. Do you mind if I read a viewer mail question?
By all means. Nate,
we have some viewer mail questions from our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. That's patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. This one comes from our friend Jordan Salisbury. By the way, I think I've mentioned it before on here. I love his steak. Very good. Jordan Salisbury asks this. Sorry I missed the live episode. It seemed like a blast. Yeah, it was a blast, Jordan. I kept waiting for you to show up. What's the deal? Hope you gentlemen are having a great week. I've seen some writers and fans comparing the potential this Reds team has to the 2023 Atlanta Braves. What are your thoughts? What is their realistic floor and ceiling? And I wanted to go ahead and dip into this, Nate, because of what you just mentioned. I think that if the Atlanta Braves ownership and management were running the Reds, if you switch today, if we had a Freaky Friday moment and Braves ownership management and Reds ownership management switched places, if the Braves were running this organization right now, I would be so bullish on the chances of this team because there are real pieces in place. But the thing I've been concerned about for a long time is that under Castellini, the Reds have never taken that next step to really fill out the roster. And so I'm hopeful they will. And if they do, man, this team has a ceiling as high as the Braves do right now. This team has a real ceiling. They have real talent. But I'm not going to believe that the Castellini ownership group and this club will actually take that next step to really keep these guys around for a long time, sign free agents to fill in the holes in the roster. I'm just, if you want to believe they're going to do that, fine. Dude, I'm not going to tell anybody how to be a fan, but there's no evidence that they will. Maybe things are different, and I hope they're different because I love this team, and I want them to take that next step. But I would say the ceiling for this team going forward is very high, and I would say the floor is very low because of ownership and management. And I wish I didn't have to say that. And I hope I'm wrong. And I'll admit to you if I'm wrong. But we don't have the Braves ownership and management running this team. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. I wish it were different. But I always try to tell you the truth here. That's the truth as I see it.
Yeah. I don't have a ton to add to that. I do think the ceiling of this team is, I think they have two or three pitchers that could be in the running to be a staff ace. I think they have five or six hitters that can get MVP votes over the next three seasons.
It's crazy.
I think the ceiling is ridiculous. I'm going to hold out optimism. Trying to go back to at least one game out of the playoffs, of a playoff spot.
With
a little over a week to go. So I'm going to keep that in mind. Good vibes sometimes, maybe not only, but good vibes most of the time.
Well, can I just say this? I'm sorry for dipping into a little bit of negativity because I'm really not negative. I'm really excited about the fact the Reds are here right now. And they lost 100 games last year. I didn't see this coming. Nobody saw this coming. I'm really genuinely enjoying every single game. It's fun to be a Reds fan right now. So I apologize if I got a little negative there because I'm worried about what they're going to do. But I love this team. I absolutely adore this team. Even, the guys that shouldn't be here if they had real players. I love them all.
The only guy on this team I don't like is Jim Evans. That guy can get out of here, loser.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, baseball is such it's a different fan experience. Football fans, and we're football fans also, but they have it easy. You have to get fired up 17 times a season. And if maybe a little bit more if your team's in it, maybe way less if your team's out of it. But that's it. One day a week, you get all fired up. Baseball is a slog, man. So we have to go through these ups and downs. We have to remember that we were in first place 2 months ago. And we have to deal with the fact that we're having these bullpen days now. So that's why some of the negativity creeps in. And I apologize too. But
can I say, I'd rather be a Reds fan than a Bengals fan right now. Oh, I'm sorry. Too soon. I know the Bengals haven't haven't been performing too well. Sorry, Joe Farsings.
Yikes. Well, we were talking about that ceiling, Chad, and I do want to mention real quick. Hunter Green. Did you see that start he had? Good Lord. Hunter Green did not get the win in this game. That's why wins and losses are stupid. The Reds lost an absolute heartbreaker. They were up 3-1 going into the top of the eighth, 3-2 going into the top of the ninth, and lost 5-3. It was absolutely brutal. And is really the source of the sort of bad vibes coming through this microphone right now, because the vibes were super high. And then within 20 minutes, I thought the season was over. I was apoplectic on my couch in the middle of the day. So, but
yeah, if they win that one, it's a completely different feeling among the fan base, isn't it?
Yeah. They're controlling their destiny. But before all that negativity happened, Hunter Green came out and pitched one of the best games you're ever going to see anybody pitch. As a matter of fact, it was the first, quick stat line, 7 innings pitch, 14 strikeouts. In case you didn't hear me, 14 strikeouts, 1 earned run, 3 hits, and 1 walk. It was the first 14 strikeout game since 2000. Remember Y2K?
I do. I was 72 years old in Y2K.
I remember I was playing ping pong at my cousin's house, and I thought we were all going to die. We didn't. Spoiler alert.
Woo!
Hunter Green pitches. I mean, it's by far, for me, I haven't got to actually watch every single game. I listened to a bunch of them, missed a couple. It's the best I've ever seen him look. He was controlling all of the outer thirds of the strike zone. He had 3 pitches working. He was peppering that fastball up and in. There was nothing they could do with it. His slider and changeup were masterful. Fastball had some life on it that I have not seen yet. If that's the Hunter Green that we're going to get every third time out, true ace potential. I can't remember what his name was. I wish I could, but somebody on as the MLB Network or ESPN went on a big long rant about how Hunter Green is the most talented under 25 pitcher in Major League Baseball right now, and you love to see it.
Yeah, no, it's not even close. I mean, we've had this discussion many times. Who is Hunter Green? Because some people, he struggles occasionally. He has struggled occasionally, but I'll say it again. I've said it before on the show, and I still believe it. This is one opinion that I'm not going to change. I've never seen a Reds pitcher in my lifetime. And again, I'm 92 years old. I'm older than James Urban. sorry. I've never seen a Reds pitcher with this much potential, with a ceiling this high. And yes, you know, he came off the injured list and he wasn't good early. And, you know, it sort of showed why we said, don't count on these guys to come back and be good immediately. But what I saw was an ace. And what I saw was not just an ace, that he could be a Reds ace, but a guy that can do that can be the best pitcher in baseball. Yep. Hunter Green is still a kid. First of all, let's not forget that he's been here for a little while. He's still a kid, and he has there's no reason to. I mean, he may not be the best pitcher in baseball ultimately, but there's no question whatsoever. He's still as dynamic, still as talented as he was the day that the Reds drafted him in, and it was a masterful performance. It was what we've all been waiting for, and not been waiting for because we've seen some of that before. We've
seen it, yeah.
Yeah. It's just people forget that before he got injured, he was by far the best pitcher on this team. His numbers were good.
Really?
This guy. Good. Yeah. If he can, I mean, health is the issue. If he can stay healthy, if Hunter Green is healthy, he's a 5-time All-Star. He is the best pitcher the Reds have had since, I don't know. I mean, I'm willing to say he's the best pitcher since Jim Maloney or going back that far, you know. Jose Rijo, maybe. I don't know. He's amazing.
There's not a single pitcher in Reds history that have ever had the God-given talent, the natural tools that Hunter Green possesses.
Yeah.
And unless you're that one turd on Twitter that I saw that somebody praised Hunter Green's start, and the guy said, Well, they should have gone 9 innings and handled the game. Get out of here.
Oh, my God.
Hunter Green currently has a, even with the struggles that he has had, especially coming back from injury, he's got a 4.2 ERA and 12.4 strikeouts per nine. The guy has been nothing short of fantastic. And we need to, this is, I feel like we do this once every 3 or 4 episodes. This is your friendly reminder from the guys at the Riverfront that Hunter Green is awesome and we need to cherish this. When you're talking about your rookies and your Elliots and your CESs and your Matt McClain's, put some respect on Hunter Green's name. He walked so they can run.
That's a great point, which is we talk about all these kids. And Ellie is the only one, although Ellie's had his struggles lately that we can discuss. But Ellie's the only one that's in the neighborhood of Hunter Green in terms of talent and ceiling and potential ceiling. Because I don't want to say it's all talent with Hunter Green because the dude works his butt off. He's a hard worker as well. So, but he's the only one with a ceiling anywhere near what Ellie De La Cruz's ceiling is. And it feels like we've kind of forgotten him a little bit because of the injuries and because of all the kids that came up here this year. And here at the Riverfront, I don't want us to forget him.
Yeah, so Matt McClain is 24. Hunter is 24. Spencer Steer is 25.
Right.
So we all love the young rookies. Hunter Green is the youngest of those three. But let's just keep that in mind. A little bit of perspective going forward.
Absolutely.
All right. I want to get into some news of the week before we get into a very, very good question from Chris Garber and the rest of our viewer mail questions. So quick news. The Inquirer came out with an article saying that Ellie De La Cruz is showing signs of fatigue. I don't know if there's any reason to go deeper into that. He's been struggling. He's a child who's facing the best talent in the entire planet.
He's 12 years old.
He accidentally does something incredible every 7 days. So pump the brakes on Ellie. Maybe they should put Ellie in the bullpen with Hunter.
Yes, I agree.
The Reds also DFA'd Hunter Renfroe. He's officially off the team now, which was, it doesn't make me feel any certain way, but it was a little surprising. Any thoughts on the Hunter Renfroe era?
Well, Hunter Renfroe DFA'd Harrison Bader on the IL. I'm trying to be charitable. There's a certain segment of online Reds fan who thinks Nick Kroll hangs the moon rather than the nuanced opinion we have, which is Nick Kroll's done some good things. Nick Kroll's done some bad things. Let's tell the truth about it. The acquisition of Harrison Bader and Hunter Renfroe, it's good, basically free, whatever. Yeah. That's fine. They were on waivers. We took them. Give it a shot. Yeah, why not try it? It's better than some of the. It didn't work out. Now, you won't hear anybody say it's Nick Kroll's fault that it didn't work out. How about we say that because they had to get those guys because there was no depth on the roster? I'm not going to say that because it's good vibes only. I'm not going to miss Hunter Renfroe. I was hopeful that he would work out. Harrison Bader, a good buddy of mine, after the Reds got Harrison Bader, was like, oh, you're going to love this guy. And I'm getting ready now that when we get finished here, I'm going to text him and say, buddy, I love you. You're wrong. I didn't love the Harrison Bader era either. There's not much to say about Renfroe. It didn't work out. I still think it was a good, it was good to take that flyer on both those guys. They didn't work out, but I'm not going to hammer Nick Kroll over that because he should have done it, but it would have been better if he'd acquired people before the season. So we didn't have to go bargain shopping at the Goodwill.
Yeah, there's probably an argument that 14 games of Hunter Renfroe is not enough to see what he can do versus bringing back Stuart Fairchild, who we know is Stuart Fairchild, which is a perfectly average final guy in your roster.
Stuart Fairchild is Hunter Renfroe, by the way. I'm not ready to make the argument that he's better than Hunter Renfroe.
I've never seen him on the field at the same time. They might be the same person.
It's possible.
So I don't know. It doesn't move the needle too much either way. So we already spent way too much time talking about it. The best news of the week, and we talked about Graham Ashcraft being shut down last week, so we don't need to get into that anymore. That hurts my soul. But Matt McClain does look like he is nearing a return and could be back in the lineup as early as Tuesday. Can't come a moment too soon. If he comes up and the Reds win out because he brings that spark and that sort of electricity that he has so often done to the lineup. Let's go. Because I think it is that this lineup, when he is in it, it just fills out so much better. Especially the way Noelvi Marte has been swinging the bat lately. CES has been swinging the bat. They can put out a really, truly terrifying lineup 1-9 if David Bell or whoever is in charge of these lineups doesn't screw it up.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about David Bell.
Which brings us to our second viewer mail question from friend of the show, friend in real life, all-time good guy, best hair on the riverfront. Chris Garber asks the question, is David Bell a good manager? You want a bat lead off on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I will. Because as happens so often, I got a little bit embarrassed online this week. My column this week at Cincinnati Magazine was about David Bell. And actually, I stand by every word that I wrote about David Bell in that piece. It was essentially saying that, look at the pitching David Bell's been given. Look at how he has been able to sort of manage a pitching staff that requires bullpen days in the final 2 weeks of a playoff race. Look at the names that he's had in the bullpen all season long, and the fact that he's been able to manage that group to keep this team in the race, I do think is a real credit to David Bell. It's the first time that I feel like I've said many, many times on the show for many years now that I feel like David Bell is just sort of meh. He's just sort of whatever. He's not good. He's not bad. And I still think that's probably true because he does some dumb nonsense. But I do think you have to give him a little credit for how he's handled this pitching staff. He's been given a bunch of garbage, and he's figured out some way, him and Reds pitching coach Derek Johnson, I figured out a way to make this pitching staff at least help keep the Reds in the race. But my goodness, the dude has some wacky lineups. He makes some of the dumbest decisions I think I've ever seen. I mean, this guy's Vern Rapp level crazy when it comes to some of the things he does during the game. That's for the old guys, Vern Rapp. I don't know what to say, but I spent 1,000 words praising David Bell in print this week. And I think I may be ready to fire him 2 days later. I don't know. I just think, I don't know. I don't know what to think. I really kind of have no opinion at this point. He's really good at some things, and he's also the worst manager in baseball in some ways. So I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the problem here, right? Because I feel like most people that are trying to evaluate managers are divided into one of two camps, which, like everything in our freaking life, it seems like you have to be one or the other. You can't be a little bit of both. It's either a manager is only as good as what he does in the clubhouse or in-game decisions. David Bell may be very good in the clubhouse. He has gotten this team to play out of their gourds. Whether he's responsible for that or not, I don't know. We tend to judge managers based on how the guys on the field play, regardless of what they do. But the Reds have far exceeded expectations. So one half of the equation, sure, he's done a fantastic job. Why you wrote the article. The other half of the equation has caused me to experience a fury that a human being should never feel when we're talking about a game. His commitment to platoon splits without looking at any sort of recency. His unwillingness to bat the better hitters higher in the order. His unwillingness to bat the bad hitters lower in the order. His unwillingness to almost admit defeat when something that he decided was going to be, he was going to try just doesn't work. The way he will not start lefties against left-handed pitchers, but then he won't pitch hit later in the game. Or he will. He'll pitch it for the good hitters, but he won't pitch it for the bad hitters.
That's crazy.
It drives me nuts. So I think David Bell should warrant manager of the year votes. He might, if the Reds make the playoffs, he might even be the front runner for the award. But I tell you what, man, if they fired him tomorrow, I wouldn't shed a tear.
I'm with you.
Listen for a second.
You know, I have only recently dipped my toes back into the Twitter sphere in the last day or two, and I saw that, and I
don't know why you did that.
No, I'm probably going to step back, but I did see that you had one of the best tweets I've seen. Well, it's the best tweet I've seen in the last month, mostly because I haven't been on Twitter.
I'll take it.
But I really liked it. You said there are a lot of David Bell haters out there, but even y'all got to admit, no one, and I mean no one, gives their hottest hitter a day off like David Bell. See, you act like you're praising him. You kind of,
I got him.
You kind of,
I roped him in
his direction. I literally tried in print to defend David Bell this week, and within like 8 hours, 10 hours of me defending him, I was like, what in the world was I doing? Because he does smart things and he does dumb things. And I think maybe the ultimate answer is he's just kind of average, like we've been saying for a long time. But good Lord, he frustrates the crap out of me.
I just wish he would be average for other reasons. He's average because he's got two extremes going. And they're both working out to meet in the middle. Why can't he just be in the middle the whole time? Don't go all the way with the platoon stuff. Keep your hottest hitters in the lineup. Don't go all the way with, I don't know. I don't know how this works. I've never been a major league manager. I once managed a summer league baseball team and remember being really happy because they executed a hit and run. That's the extent of my managerial experience when I was 18 years old. It's probably really difficult, but my goodness. I mean, I've got a lot of friends in my life that are fans of other franchises, and they do not feel about their managers the way I feel about David Bell.
You know, to be fair to him, I wonder how much the front office is dictating lineup decisions, because that's what happens around baseball these days.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's a fair, very fair point.
But if the front office is, first of all, the front office is not dictating necessarily late game decisions, which are insanity. But if the front office is, whether it's front office or David Bell, how do you justify the fact that Will Benson can't get in the top two spots in the lineup? I mean, you know me. I'm the world's number one fan of Will Benson.
It's true.
But it's I don't understand what he needs to do. The dude gets on base. I don't know. They're just very curious decisions. And here I go again being – I'm not thinking I'm being negative, yeah. But I don't understand. I just don't understand. I've been watching baseball for a long time, and these are things that I just don't understand, and I'm willing to admit.
Yeah. Well, and it's worth discussing just because there is a chance that he's going to win Manager of the Year, and – that's interesting considering half a fan base would love to see him fired. So whether it's justified or not, it's worth talking about.
You can make an argument for him as manager of the year. You can make a real argument. You can also make an argument for him as one of the three worst managers in the league. It's a crazy thing.
He's the worst over manager. He's over managers all the time. All right. More of your mail questions. Again, these come from our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy, where you too can join the family. Next question comes from Woo the Reds. This one, it's a good question, and it hurt me a little bit. But Woo asks, why aren't you going to see Joey Votto's potential last game in a Reds uniform at GABP? And why is that excuse absolute BS? Woo, what I will say is, I wish we had scheduled the 500th episode podcast for this coming weekend. I could go back in time, especially knowing that we were not going to get to see Joey. I would do that in a heartbeat. Otherwise, we live in Virginia, and it's expensive to fly to Cincinnati and get hotel rooms. And we don't have enough Patreon subscribers. So that's all I got. I wish I could be there. But I take umbrage with it. You claiming this is, well, you said potentially, but there it's not going to be the last homestand of Joey Votto's career.
That's what I was going to say. I hope it's not. I desperately hope it's not. I think it probably is. You and the fact the Reds haven't honored him.
Shut your handsome mouth.
That's fair. It's completely fair. If it is his last one and the Reds haven't honored him, this is as unforgivable as anything the Castellini regime has done. I'm with you. I wish we had scheduled our live episode around this weekend. That's a regret.
Hindsight. I am terrified of how this could play out.
Me too.
If they limp to the finish and miss the playoffs, because once again, they did not get the talent to surround Joey Votto with. And then he never wears the uniform again. We'll talk about it at length here at the Riverfront. So, Woo, thank you for making me want to cry in public.
Woo's good at that. Woo is good at that. He makes me cry a couple times a week.
But you're right, Woo. The excuse is BS. Everyone should be there. Sell out the stadium this weekend. Go, everyone. Go and cheer on Joey. Appreciate number 19. All right. Next question comes from...
Okay, just quickly. Yeah. Sunday should be a sellout for Joey. It won't be. It should be a sellout in case it's Joey's last game, because he's one of the greatest players in the history of this franchise.
Yeah. Also, it should be a sellout anyway, because the Reds are in playoff contention for the last home stand of the year. But if not for that, do it for 19. All right, next question. Joey Gaudisa, friend from Canada. Do the Reds get in? Yay or nay? Short and pithy. All right, we're on the spot. Chad, Sean Dawson, do they get in?
Well, you just told everyone my middle name. I don't approve of that. But I'm going to say yes, they get in. And is that a prediction? I'm not sure it's a prediction as much as it's what I want to happen. But there's 8 games left. They're 1 game back. Yeah, there's a couple teams ahead of them. But if you think it's done because they lost 2 of 3 to the Minnesota Twins, get out of here. It's not done. We have 8 games of fun left. Watch them. Cheer for the Reds. And yes, I think they're going to sneak in. I'm not ready to predict what's going to happen when they get in, but they're going to sneak in.
Yeah, absolutely. The Reds are getting in. Good vibes only.
Most hash brown, good vibes only.
Good vibes occasionally. All right. Next question from Jeff Euchler. I hate looking ahead when the Reds are in the middle of the playoff hunt. That said, is there any question that they are going to rationalize themselves to themselves that they have plenty of starters by next spring and therefore don't need to add any in the offseason? I'm glad this was asked. I saw Lance McAllister tweeted out a couple days ago, listed all the potential Red starters. It was like, how do we feel about the depth going in the next season? And like 3 of the dudes that were on there, I never heard of or had barely heard of. One of them was Lyon Richardson, who I'm a fan of, but I think he's going to be a reliever. I'm terrified about that, Jeff. There's tons of questions. They're absolutely, in my mind. I shouldn't say absolutely because you never know. Hopefully they've turned a corner. But if I was a betting man and I had to put my money somewhere, they're going to say, we really like who we've got. We like what those guys showed us. That's who we're going to roll with. And they're not going to spend the dime. If all of those guys are healthy and pan out, then great. It's fine. But that happens to like one team a season and to the Reds in 2012. It's extremely rare, can't be counted on, shouldn't be counted on, and the Reds need to go out and get veteran starting pitching and other things. But that's not what the question was about. So, yeah, Jeff, I'm terrified. Chad?
Yeah, you know, again, we're trying to be good vibes only. But this is my single biggest fear about what happens going into the 2024 season. I saw one of the Nick Cross groupies who got off his knees and tweeted, listen to all these pitchers. And yeah, there's some guys that if everything goes right, that can be a lot of depth. Everything doesn't go right with big league pitching, as we saw this season. So it's my biggest fear for next year. that I don't want to think too much about because I want to be optimistic about next season. But if you think that this group of pitchers the Reds currently have in the big leagues and in the minor leagues is going to be enough depth to put this team in the playoff race next year, I'm sorry. You're out of your mind. That's not – here's something I've said many times in the last this podcast started in 2007, which is ridiculous. And I've said this term hundreds of times. Hope is not a strategy. And if you think that this group of pitchers is enough for next year, you are relying on hope. And that's fine. I'm hopeful every year. I want these guys to work out. But there's no way in the world that the group of pitching that the Reds have now that'll be available for 2024, that you should believe there's enough pitching to have sufficient depth to make this team a real playoff contender next year. There's no way. There's some guys that have potential, but I'm not getting onto DraftKings and laying some money on this group. I'm sorry.
No, couldn't agree more. Side note, this will be irrelevant when you hear it tomorrow, but the Pirates just laid 2 runs on the Cubs to go up 2-0. Go Pirates.
Did you just say go Pirates on the world's most dangerous podcast? Did you say that?
That's how dangerous I am. I know what Tim Daniel might do to me.
He will not be happy.
We want the Pirates to win tonight. All right, next question comes from Rex Scott, the captain of Team Believe. Rex says, guys, let's hear your picks for all the playoff spots. Who wins both leagues and who wins the series? Also, if Nate is the worst now, what was he like when he was younger? I'm the oldest too, Chad, so I'll believe and understand whatever you say. That is in reference to me posting the request for viewer mail questions a little bit late today and referring to myself as the worst, which is true. I am the worst. But to get to the meat of the question, I don't know. You want me to start?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. All right, whatever. You're running things here.
So, American League, I got the Orioles going all the way to the World Series. I love this Orioles team. I think best case scenario for the Red Legs is that this season is what the Orioles did last year, and they make a big, big, big push next season. So that's what I'm hoping for. Also, the Rays out of the AL East. Get one of those wild card spots. And the Central, the Twins are going to pull that out. The rest of that division is hot garbage, and we won't see any of them until next season. Over in the West, it gets a little funky. I think they have a chance. I'm not sure on standings here, but I like the Astros and Rangers to come out of the West. And then I'm going to put the Mariners to get that final wild card spot over the Blue Jays just because Keino Suarez. That's sort of the only reason.
Exactly.
The National League, Braves and Phillies are both going to make the playoffs out of the East. In the Central, we're going to see the Brewers and your Cincinnati Reds. And then West, we're going to see the Dodgers. And I think the Diamondbacks are going to edge out the Marlins for that last spot. It's going to be between the Reds, Marlins, and D-backs. The Reds are going to take it. So after that, we'll see the... I mean, if I was putting money down, Chad, I would go Braves Orioles for the World Series with the Braves winning. But I'm going to go Reds Orioles. Reds winning in a sweep with Carson Spears taking the bump in game 4 to shut him down.
That is so funny. That's where I was going to go. Orioles Reds. Yeah. No, I think what you said about the Orioles, and this is my dream for next year's Reds, is that they follow the Orioles trajectory. But yeah, I'm with you. Let's just go Orioles Reds World Series. I think I'm with you. I'm cheering for Seattle. I'd like to see them win the West.
Would love to see him take a run. Some people gave them crap and were like, oh, who wants the trades now?
Exactly.
Seattle was floundering early in the season. People were trashing them again, and here they are. Everybody, I saw an argument the other day. People were like, oh, do you think the Mariners would go back and do it all again? I'm like, they had the longest playoff drought in the history, or like in all major, like big four major sports. They ended it, and we're a couple plays away from making the World Series.
Yeah.
Last year, they were like 2 walk-offs away from making the World Series. Yeah, they would do it again. Sorry. I get fired up sometimes.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Minnesota, I don't know, people were upset. And I was not happy with the Reds losing 2 of 3, but Minnesota's a good team. And so, yeah, they're going to make it. But I don't know if it's going to be Baltimore. I actually think if I were going to bet, I think I'd probably put my money on Houston or Tampa Bay, make it to the series. But I'm hoping it's Baltimore. National League, I look at all these teams in the National League, and the Braves are really good. I mean, they just are. You know, Milwaukee's pretty good. The Dodgers, they're the Dodgers. They're really good. But it's pretty clear to me that the Reds are the best team in the National League. So,
obviously,
I'm actually going to go Houston, Cincinnati, Reds win in 6 games. That's where I'm going.
The Dusty Baker Bowl. I love it.
Ooh, I love it.
All right. My next question comes from Branch Brown. Branch, good to see you again, buddy. The Reds will obviously have higher expectations going into 2024 than they did in 2023. I'm counting anything other than winning the division as a failure. Am I being unrealistic? My quick response is, yeah, if they lose the division and make the wild card and still make a big, deep playoff run, then I'm cool with that. But I hear what you're saying, especially the way that everybody said, 2023 is not their year. They're never supposed to contend. Next year is always their year. There's a lot of people out there that I'm not one of those people that likes to do old takes exposed. But if I was, I know which ones I would have saved. People that were guaranteeing the Reds were going to be in this position next year, because you're never guaranteed squat.
And the Cubs are going to try to improve their team in the offseason. The Brewers are going to try to improve their team in the offseason. The Cardinals are going to try to improve their team in the offseason.
No, not the Cardinals. They never do good baseball things.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So if you're just sort of counting on the fact that this wasn't the Reds' year, next year is, well, I got some news for you. Other teams are going to try. I hope the Reds try. Tell me what you have seen in the last 10 years to think the Reds are actually going to try. So I don't think the Reds are, I think that there will be no major outlet, no major media organization that predicts the Reds as the favorites in the National League Central in 2024. I don't think it'll happen. Now, they still could because of what we said earlier. Got some real talent here, but
that
I don't see it.
That's a good point. As big as we are on this team's the prospects for the future, no one outside of Cincinnati is going to pick the Reds to win the Central next year.
I really don't think so.
They'll all pick the Brewers or maybe the Cubs, depending on what happens in the offseason. We'll see. Good point. Good question, Branch. Next question comes from Corey Ryan. He's continuing our Ninja Turtles saga, which is...
Stop, Corey, stop.
Never stop. It's entertained me to no end. Corey says, gentlemen, your B-level Reds from last week have kept the streets safe while your Turtle Reds healed up. The timing of their return could not be better, as the city is facing a recurring threat yet again. Pirates. What 4 Pirate players or coaches, past or present, would you most like to see our Turtle Reds make walk the plank? Bonus question, what's your favorite movie that takes place on a boat? See, I like how Corey has manipulated the rules by getting in 2 questions every week by asking an awesome question. The second question is always about movies.
Corey's figured it out.
Yeah, he's hacked it. I need to think about this boat one for a second. But I'm not going to lie to you. We even talked about this a little bit off air. Like, not a ton of hateable pirates.
I hate the Pirates. I'm sorry, Tim Daniel, if you're listening. I know you really hate Pittsburgh, and I kind of hate Pittsburgh as well. But the only person that I can think of that I hate for the Pirates is Roberto Clemente. What a garbage human being that guy. Wait a minute. No. No, that's not true. Clint Hurdle, former Red, former Pirates manager. That guy's garbage. But other than that, I know I kind of hate Pittsburgh, but I could not come up with names of individual players that I hated other than I hate Roberto Clemente. I hate Willie Stargell. I hate Andrew McCutchen. No, I don't hate any of those guys. I'm sorry. I can't answer this question from Corey.
I'm glad you pulled back that Roberto Clemente slander, because my Puerto Rico wife about sent the chancleta up the stairs. It was coming. What about Dave Parker? Screw that guy.
Dave Parker. What a No, he's great. He's my favorite pirate of all time.
I'm going to throw out Honus Wagner because he was awesome. But what kind of name is Honus?
Yeah, screw that.
Can you imagine like getting to an age where you realize you understand choices and right and wrong, and you're like, Mom and Dad, you named me Honus? Why would you do that?
Honus Vado. What about Honus Vado? That doesn't work. No.
And I'm going to throw out one more 19th century stud, Patsy Donovan. Honus and Patsy. Kick rocks. Walk the plank.
Can I name one?
With Clint Hurdle.
Yeah, really. How about this guy? A former Reds farmhand. Manny Sarmiento. I don't know. I just wanted to say Manny Sarmiento. I just wanted to say
that sounds like a cheese.
I think it might be.
Fancy cheese.
Tell the Puerto Rican wife that I'm sorry. I love Roberto Clemente. I wasn't being serious. I'm sorry.
That's a great question, though. The bonus question. What's your favorite movie that takes place on a boat? Huh.
Well, let me say this. My least favorite movie literally of all time. I think the worst movie I've ever seen took place on a boat. And it was Waterworld, the Kevin Costner disaster. Literally the worst movie I've ever seen. My favorite, probably.
Ooh, I got it.
Master and Commander is what I would say.
100%.
Are you going there too?
Yep. Me a second. Absolutely. Great movie.
Russell Crowe.
Without question. Legendary flick. I love it. Great choice.
Yeah. Excellent.
There we go. Next question comes from Seth Shaner. Seth says, this season has been a pleasant surprise. I watched my 12-year-old son be apathetic for the first month and a half of the season before he started to get pulled in by Matt McClain and Ellie and all the hijinks that went on. I miss the hijinks. Even if the Reds miss the playoffs, will this be remembered as the year the Reds piqued the interest of young people across Reds country and served as a foundation for the glory years to come?
Can I take the lead here?
Yeah, please, please.
I hope so. That's sort of what we were talking about earlier. It depends on what happens going forward. But I'm kind of desperate for it to be the 2009 season of the previous good Reds, for a similar reason that Seth says, which is my son, who's a little older, he's 18, but he got back into the Reds. And I thought I had given up. Yeah, you know, he was like, the Reds are trash, Dad. And he wasn't wrong. And he got back into them because of these kids. And so personally, it's kind of a personal thing for me. I hope this is like the opening salvo, because it'll make me happy to see my son really kind of sort of, I don't know what the word is, but he'll be a real Reds fan. He'll really get into him after some bad seasons. I fear that it's going to be the same as what we've seen, which is it's going to tease him. And they're going to go back to being the Reds. But I want it personally, not for me as much as literally for my son. Because, I mean, to see him like posting Ellie De La Cruz pictures on his Instagram, I can't believe it. This was not possible 12 months ago. So I hope so, Seth. I hope so.
Yeah, 100%. I think I'm going to keep the good vibes going and say that it absolutely is. That the,
yes.
You know, we talk about, you know, what ownership and front office has done in the past. They've never had an opportunity like this one. So
true.
I'm going to lean into this being uncharted territory that they absolutely handle correctly. And if I'm proven wrong, then I won't be shocked. But if I'm proven right, then let's freaking go, man.
Bring it on.
All right. Our last question of the night comes from James Urban. He says, if you had to be one age for the rest of your life, what age are you taking? Who? You know, when you're at an advanced age like James Urban, you really start reflecting on past experience. I don't know, Chad. I would say for me, like, these mid-30s have been pretty dope. I'm loving everything about the way life's fleshing out right now. So I am 38. I am shorter than Hooper Pal thought I was going to be, which isn't relevant, but was funny. A little tidbit from the live show. I'm going to say 38. 38 has been an awesome year so far. I feel great. Reds are competing. I'm married, have a dope wife, great family. 38, James. That's it. It's a long time ago for you. I know, but.
All right. Slow your roll, Chief. I'm not going to say how old I am, except that you know that I'm older than Nate, and there are two brothers in between us in age. But that was actually my answer. The truth is, where I am right now, it's now work has been wearing me out, so that's why I haven't been around the last couple weeks. But it's pretty good. Life is pretty good right now, and from a Reds perspective, maybe I would say when I was in high school and the Reds had won the 1990 World Series, and that was a exciting time. But I'm in a pretty good place personally, professionally, and also there's hope for the Reds going forward. And that's just about all I can ask for with this team. There's been so many years in the last 30 years where we had no hope. And we have like legitimate hope going into next season. So I'm pretty happy with where things are right now. And, let's rock and roll.
Well, I can't think of a better way to wrap this podcast up than that on a high, truly high note. So, Chad, any parting thoughts before we sign off tonight?
No, just I'm sorry I haven't been around the last couple of weeks because I love this community. I love this group. I had so much fun at the live show. I have so much fun talking to Reds with you. And I hope everyone will genuinely, these last eight games, really lean into it because we don't get this often. And the Reds may make it. They may not make it. But this is what we've been asking for, a team that was in the mix going into the last week of the season. And I'm trying not to forget how special this is given what we've experienced. And I'm watching every single pitch. So go Reds. I'm excited.
Yeah, I second every single bit of that. And please, by all means, go out and support the guys for this final homestand. A great American. Go support Joey Votto. You never know. And let's just keep enjoying this ride because we might get in line for it up until the last game of the season. And that's pretty cool. So thank you to everybody for listening and supporting the Riverfront. Go check out our other shows, the Bengals show, Late Night Reds with Tim Daniel. We got some really exciting stuff going on with Riverfront U. So we're going to have coverage of the Bearcats, Xavier, and Northern Kentucky coming your way. Already up on the website, podcast coming soon. So check in on that and tell your friends about us. If you have kids, make them follow us on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button. That's how we get the word out. And you know you want to get the word out. And again, if you don't want the word to get out, why have you listened an hour and 13 minutes into this podcast? It's crazy behavior. And you should be reprimanded in public. But for the rest of you, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, all the places. We are at Riverfront Cincy. We appreciate you. And finally, big, 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 big shouts to the family at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. We love you. Couldn't do it without you. So, Chad, shout out to Adam Dunn. Shouts to Lee Salverto and Wayne Krenchicki and even Eli Cash. For Chad Dotson and Ron Valone, this is Nate Dotson. Man, take it easy.